I think most of you know that a couple weeks ago we moved. And so one aspect of our move is we were kind of downsizing in space. And so when we moved here from Lubbock 6 years ago, my company moved us. So they just kind of showed up and they packed everything up. And so while Betsy went through a few things, most everything came from that house. And from Lubbock to the house, our previous house, we grew in space. So all those boxes and everything just came along and ended up in different areas. And so this move required us to, like, really go through things and begin to downsize. So as I was going through my office and packing up some boxes, I found this box. And I opened it up, and I found all my old baseball cards. And I found my baseball card magazines. It was called Beckett. I don't know if it still exists or not, but baseball card magazines. And I had game tickets from basketball and football games that I went to at when I was a student at Tech, and then also before whenever I was going with my grandparents. And so I had all these cool, like, little souvenir things in there that that I hadn't seen in years and that I'd kind of forgotten about. And so as I was looking at these things, all these memories came back. I remember as a teenager, probably about 14, 15, 16, probably before a driver's license, we would spend summers, me and my brothers and all my friends in the neighborhood. I mean, baseball cards were a big thing. And this magazine would come out every month. And so it was a big deal because it would come out and we would go to the card store, wait for them to open it. And it was exciting because it's like, okay, which player is going to be on the magazine? And more importantly, it had every card ever made, and it told its value. So we would go through it and see, did our card go up 5 cents? Did it go down 5 cents? You know, if we were making trades with each other, well, is this my card's worth $5. Yours is only worth $2. You got to throw in a few more cards. And it's just how we spent our summers. And so I've got several of the magazines that had a lot of my favorite players on it, and I found one that had Michael Jordan on it, which I may need to actually go get that one looked at, see what that's worth. But it was pretty neat going through all these different things because all these memories came back. But the sad thing is I'd forgotten about them. You know, I'd forgotten that I had these things because I hadn't seen them in such a long time. They still have value to me, but years had went by, and I just kind of put them in a box and put them away, and didn't think about them, and didn't show them that they had value. And then so over time, like I said, I kind of forgot that they existed over time and how important they were in my life at one point. From a spiritual perspective, we have many treasures that mean a lot to us. We have many things that God has given us. We have our belief system. We have our doctrines. We have experiences. We have relationships. We have camp memories. We have all these things that mean a lot to us, that we value, that are treasures to us, just like my baseball cards were treasures to me. So we have these treasures that mean a lot. But unfortunately, sometimes we can take some of these original things that we learned as we were growing up in the church, or maybe as we came into the church as an adult, we can sometimes take some of these original things and not think about them as much. Because we kind of think of them as building blocks, right? Well, I'll go back to that later, or I'll restudy that later. They're important to us, but we don't think about them as much. As a Christian, though, there are things that we need to review, and we need to review often, and we need to think about often because, again, they are the building blocks of our faith. And if we just put them away in a spiritual box in the spiritual closet and don't bring them out often, we can forget. We can become weaker in these things. And so we need to review some of these basic things occasionally so that they don't lose their importance. They don't lose their meaning. The last several months, there's been probably once a month, maybe once every 6 weeks, a sermon has been given on a doctrine of the church. And so today I want to kind of continue that, but I hope to do this in a little bit different of a way because I want to combine two doctrines in my message today. And I would recommend that, especially young people, if you've never read this booklet, if you've been in the church forever and you haven't read this booklet in decades, pull out the booklet of just the foundational doctrines and review them. go through them, because they're the basics of what we believe. They're the foundation of our relationship with God. And so it's important to do this occasionally. And so that is going to be my goal today on the two. You know, the Bible is full of different topics. I didn't count them, but I think there's 16 basic doctrines. But if you look at things just individually and not as the Bible as a whole, things can appear to be very disjointed. We have to take the Bible as a whole. You can't just take one little thing and look at that and ignore everything else. So everything has to be looked at as a whole. And so what I want to do, again, is I want to discuss two of what I think are the most important spiritual treasures that we have today, things that God has given us. And I think we'll see that both are built on the same foundation, and both are found throughout the Bible. From Genesis to Revelation, they're found throughout the Bible, just like so many things are. You know, if we look from Genesis to Revelation, we understand that there's a theme of Jesus Christ coming to be the Messiah, returning in the second kingdom, to set up the kingdom. So we see all these things throughout the Bible, and these two things, I believe, are the same as well. We're going to look at four areas in the Bible. We're going to look at the creation. We're going to look on Mount Sinai when God codified his law. We're going to look at Jesus' life, and then we're going to look at the New Testament church and see where these doctrines are. We find these together in all these areas and how important they are. So what I want to talk about today is the Sabbath and the family. And you can replace marriage for family, depending on where you are in life. But the Sabbath and the family, and how they are intertwined together, and how you can't really separate them. Can't have one without the other. Now, at first glance, you may be thinking, okay, well, how's he going to do this? Does that make sense? But again, like I said, we're going to see this throughout the Bible. And I think if you look at how the world treats the Sabbath and the family, you'll understand how much Satan hates both of these things. And you'll see how they're under attack. And they've been under attack since the Garden of Eden. Think about the majority of the commandments, right? The majority of the world understands and believes it's wrong to lie. It's wrong to steal. It's wrong to kill someone. Most of the world doesn't have problems with these things. But again, when you look at what Satan has chose to attack, the majority of the world, both believing and unbelieving, don't understand the Sabbath. And we see how, especially in the Western world and society, how don't understand family and marriage and what God has made. And so these two things are connected, and they're so important to God, and Satan has focused all his attention on these things. And so that's, as we go through today, my goal is just to remind us of how important these two things are to God, and how they're tied together. So let's go ahead and begin. Let's go to the very beginning. Let's go back to Genesis. And if you're taking notes, kind of how I've set this up is we'll look at the Sabbath and the family in each of these areas. So we'll start with creation, then we'll go to Mount Sinai, then we'll go to Jesus' life, and then we'll go to the New Testament church, looking at the Sabbath and the family in each of these. So let's go to Genesis chapter 2. Genesis chapter 2. And so my goal is on these is today is not to look at these from, okay, well, God says to do it, so we have to do it, right? Okay, we kind of know that. But I want to look at it more from perspective of why God wants us to do it and the value. And if you were able to look at the note, at the questions that we're going to talk about in the discussion, it revolves around that. It revolves around how the Sabbath has been a blessing in your life. You know, why is Satan attacking these things? And so that'll be some of the things we talk about in discussion as a group. But in Genesis 2, beginning in verse 1, we see here, let's start reading. Genesis 2, beginning in verse 1. It says, "Thus the heavens and the earth and all the hosts of them were finished. And on the seventh day, God ended his work which he had done, and he rested on the seventh day from all his work which he had done. Then God blessed the seventh day, he sanctified it, because in it he rested from all his work which God had created and made." Again, we know, every verse that we look at today is not going to be anything new. It's things that you know. But as we look at this, we see the important thing. The Sabbath was from the very beginning. And God made it holy from the very beginning. And that is so, so important, because that knowledge, or that those two sentences that I just said, and the knowledge that you have, 99% of the world does not understand that. They don't understand it at all. They never have. They don't understand that Sabbath was from the very, very beginning. It wasn't something that was just given to the Jewish people by Moses. It goes to the very, very beginning. And that's part of Satan's deception, right? The vast majority of people don't understand that because Satan is clouding their mind. Satan is not allowing that to happen, not allowing them to understand that. And so you hear all these different arguments. Well, again, it was just for the Jewish people. It was just for the Old Testament times, whatever it may be. No, God said at the very, very beginning, on the seventh day, after he had made everything else, he didn't make man holy. He didn't make the animals holy. He didn't make the sun and the moon. He said he was happy with all these things. He was well pleased, but only the Sabbath did he make holy. Only the Sabbath did he set apart and sanctify and say, this is different. It was so important to God that he used the Sabbath as a way to put an exclamation point on all of creation week. Think about it in this term. So Tuesday's 4th of July. How many of you have ever went to a fireworks show? So at a fireworks show, the show starts, right? And fireworks start going off. And they're pretty, right? And you're seeing all these things. But you go to the fireworks show because you're waiting for the end, right? The end is whenever the big finale, when all the fireworks come out, right? You've got the fireworks going and they're good, but you're waiting for the end. That's what you remember, that big finale when all the fireworks are going off. Everything's, you know, is beautiful. The sky is lit up. That's the Sabbath. God used the Sabbath as his big grand finale of creation week. Why would God do something like this if he was just going to say 3,000 or 4,000 years later, it doesn't matter. I'm going to change that. Now it's Sunday. Just from that perspective, it makes no sense. At the very beginning, God said, this is a special day. This is a special time. It's my grand finale. It'll always be holy. It'll always be set apart. And because of that, God says, I want you to protect my Sabbath. I want you to respect my Sabbath. I want you to look forward to my Sabbath, just like we look forward to that grand finale in the fireworks show. God says, I want you to look forward to that. I made that for you. It reminds you of all the other things going on that I've done for you. And so it's separated. The Sabbath was separated from the very, very beginning. The family and marriage especially is, we find there as well, right? So we're still in Genesis 2. We'll skip down to verse 21 to start here. But again, just like the Sabbath isn't understood, the value of marriage and family, it's not understood anymore. One of the shows that we kind of watch as a family is called House Hunters. How many of you know what House Hunters is? So House Hunters basically is a big 30-minute open house. Betsy and I, when we first were married, so we had zero money, and so we looked for like free entertainment. And open houses was always something that we liked to do. So we would go, and we would go look at open houses. The problem is, we would have to go back to our little cheap apartment, and then we'd be demoralized for several days because, like, oh, I want to live. I want that house. It was so nice. But then we'd keep going. And the Parade of Homes is really bad. So I don't know if Lubbock would have a Parade of Homes every year. I don't know if Dallas or any other, it may be a Lubbock thing. I don't know. But it would be basically three or four neighborhoods and probably four, five, six houses. And they would do the beginner homes, middle homes, and then like really fancy homes. And it was always funny because, and again, same thing, you'd go from those and we'd go back and be like, oh, I'll never be able to, we'll never afford that house. It would just be nice to have, you know, that house, but where we live now is like, it's worse than the beginner home. So again, sadness would set in, but it worked out, but we still did that. But anyway, House Hunters is that version on TV. So you have a couple and they're looking at three homes and they pick which one they're going to buy, and you get to see different areas of the country and world, and you know, it's interesting to us. But it's very interesting, though, at the very beginning of the show, they introduced a couple, and the couple says a little something about themselves. It is amazing how many And it's mostly 30 and under, but it can be. But how many amazing how many couples are buying a home, not married at all? How many already have kids buying a home, aren't married? There was one, I think, last week, and she was talking about the order. She goes, well, you know, we already have kids. I'm excited. We're going to buy in our home. I guess the next step after that is we'll talk about marriage. And it was just like, the world has no concept, right? Again, because of Satan's deception, of the value of marriage, how marriage is a building block. It doesn't understand that. The Bible, though, from the very beginning, God set it up a certain way. So verse 21, let's start there. Genesis 2, verse 21. And the Lord God caused a deep sleep to fall on Adam, and he slept. And he took one of his ribs and closed up the flesh in its place. And then the rib which the Lord God had taken from man, he made into a woman. And he brought her to the man. And Adam said, this is now bone of my bones and flesh of my flesh. She shall be called woman because she was taken out of man. Therefore a man shall leave his father and mother and be joined to his wife, and they shall become one flesh. From the beginning, God set up the covenant of marriage. God set up the idea of a family. And the theme of the family, the reason why it's in the very beginning is because family is the theme of the entire Bible. God is growing his family. When Jesus Christ returns and God begins to set up, he is going to grow his family. We will be spiritual members in his family. It's why the family is so important to him. It's why he, at the very beginning, said this is how it's going to be, so that we could learn physically what God is trying to do spiritually. Satan knows that. He knew it from the beginning. That's why the next chapter, what's the first thing Satan does? He separated the husband and wife. And he's been doing it ever since. And so they're intertwined from the very beginning. Just like the Sabbath, the family's anchored in God's original plan. Just like the Sabbath, it's not understood by the majority of mankind. It's being attacked relentlessly in our society. And again, these things happen, and it's not an accident. It's not an accident that, again, the majority of people don't find it's wrong to steal or lie or murder or things like that. But the Sabbath, respecting marriage, those things, they don't understand. I was just looking at some statistics, and I think it said in the 50s or 60s, it was almost 80% of households in the United States were a traditional family. Husband, wife, biological children. That's less than 40% now. So less than 40% of households in the United States are what we would consider traditional. And again, it just shows how effective Satan has been in his attack on these things. And so just as much as God says, I want you to respect the Sabbath, I want you to value the Sabbath, I want you to put the Sabbath, you know, on a pedestal, God says, I want you to do the same thing with your marriages, with your family. They need to be valued, they need to be respected, because there's a bigger picture for it, just like the Sabbath. The Sabbath is a much bigger picture of what the future holds in God's kingdom. So let's move to the commandments. Let's go to Exodus. So we see that it goes from the very, very beginning. It's very important. But then God also says, I'm going to give you 10 commandments, right? There's hundreds of statutes, there's laws, there's all these other things, but there's only 10 commandments. And God uses three of these commandments to talk about the Sabbath and the family. So let's go to Exodus 20, again, as we're reviewing. I think it's very interesting that as we see this, that the Sabbath and the family is actually at the center of God's law. Right? In verse 8 of Exodus chapter 20, we see it says, God says, remember the Sabbath day to keep it holy. 6 days you shall labor and do all your work, but the seventh day is the Sabbath of the Lord your God. In it you shall do no work, you nor your son nor your daughter, maidservants, your employees. Verse 11, for in 6 days the Lord made the heavens and the earth, the sea, and all that is in them, and he rested the seventh day. Therefore the Lord blessed the Sabbath day, and he hallowed it. Again, he blessed it. It stood apart. Again, it just shows the value of the Sabbath. But if you look at the Ten Commandments, right, we know that the first four commandments display the greatest commandment, which is love God with all your heart, soul, and mind. We show God love by obeying those four commandments. And so many people, you know, do their best and they don't have other gods, they don't have idols, they respect his name. But there's a fourth, obeying his Sabbath. All four of those things are how God, if we want to say how he receives love, if we want to kind of take that context, was it the five love language, that book, you know, where everyone, we have different ways we receive love. We show God that we love him by obeying these first four commandments. That's how he receives love. He's the only God. We don't make idols. We respect his name, and we respect and reverence the day that he made holy, that he himself said, I am making this holy and different. You can't just do three of the four. Something's missing. I think it's interesting that people do view the Sabbath as something that is optional, or something that we can choose to participate in. I've heard people say, well, every day is the Sabbath to me. I worship God every day. Well, that's fine. You can worship God every day, but only God says there's one day that is set aside that you give the entire day. That day is special. You can worship God on Monday, but God says, I want you to set aside Saturday and worship me on that day for those 24 hours. And again, as we've seen, it's not just the Sabbath. It wasn't something just given to the Jewish people. People will turn here and say, see here, this was Ten Commandments. That was just given to the Jews. Although, again, the Jews are only one tribe. 12 tribes came out of Israel, came out of Egypt. It wasn't just for the Jewish people. But it's a command directly from God. And it's very significant to us as his people. Exodus 31. Let's go to Exodus 31. And this is a few verses here that I think stand out and I think is important for us to remember as we observe the Sabbath and how it does separate us. And that God has done this specifically. Exodus 31, and let's start in verse 12. So this is after the Ten Commandments. It's right before the golden calf. It says, and the Lord spoke to Moses, saying, speak to the children of Israel, again, not just the Jews, speak to all the children of Israel, saying, surely my Sabbaths you shall keep, for it is a sign between me and you throughout your generations, that you may know that I am the Lord who sanctifies you. So he was making an agreement here with Israel that the Sabbath was going to be a sign. Now, we know that there's physical Israel that existed then, and we know that there's spiritual Israel. And we are part of spiritual Israel. God is working with us. God is no longer, in the Old Testament, he called a specific nation, a specific group of people. After Christ's death and resurrection, he's calling a people to be in his kingdom. But he says there's a sign here. And we can keep reading down. Verse 14, you shall keep the Sabbath. Therefore, it's holy to you. Everyone who profanes it shall surely be put to death. Again, how serious it was to God. Verse 15, work shall be done for 6 days, but the seventh is a Sabbath. And then verse 16, therefore the children of Israel shall keep the Sabbath, to observe the Sabbath, throughout their generations as a perpetual covenant. Not perpetual, meaning forever. Meaning it didn't end when, you know, the nation of Israel was overtaken. It didn't end then, because perpetual means forever. As a perpetual covenant. It is a sign between me and the children of Israel forever. So the Sabbath is a sign of God's people. It always has been that way. Now, this isn't, and I'm not, doesn't mean that we're better than other people. Because some people, and I've heard this, they'll say, well, but there's other Christians that, you know, they go to church on Sunday and they're really good people and they're worshiping God and they do really good things. And those things are all true. I'm not talking about what knowledge God has given someone else. I'm talking about the information and the knowledge that God has given us. And God has given us knowledge about the Sabbath. And God says that is a distinguishing mark. It's different. It is separate. That his people will understand the Sabbath. They will observe the Sabbath. From Friday sunset to Saturday sunset. That's a sign of his people. Because the Bible says so. And God says forever it will be that way. I have a ton of friends. Betsy and I have talked about this before. We have a ton of friends that, you know, are really good Christians, right? They are doing the best, and sometimes we like, wow, I need to look to attain to that level of just, you know, kindness and the service attitude. But they don't understand the Sabbath. But I know when Jesus comes back, I know when it's their opportunity and they're standing in front of God, they're standing in front of Jesus, and he's talking to them about the Sabbath, they're going to immediately be like, of course, how could I have not done that? They're not going to fight the Sabbath at that point. They're deceived now. The Bible is very clear. There's a veil over the people. It is through Satan. So this, when we say this, this isn't saying that we're better than anyone else. It means we have more. God is holding us accountable. We have a responsibility. We know about the Sabbath. God is saying, you know about the Sabbath. Why are you doing that on the Sabbath? You know about the Sabbath. Why are you fill in the blank? Because you know about it. You are my people. That is the sign. It's a bigger responsibility that we have. But it's very, very important. It's why we protect the Sabbath. It's why we respect it. And it's why we have to be very careful what we do on this day and what we don't do. It is a holy time to God. The family is right there along with it. Right back in Exodus 20, we go immediately from the Sabbath into the fifth commandment. Honor your father and your mother, that your days may be long upon the land which the Lord your God is giving you. Again, there's a promise associated. It's the only commandment with a promise. Honor your mother and father, and your days will be long. I think we think about this commandment from a context of our kids. And so, you know, there's a lot of little kids in the room, teenagers. It is your obligation, as you love God, to honor your parents. But that commandment doesn't stop when you turn 18. It's probably harder, I've known this in my life, it's harder for me to honor my parents as an adult in many ways than it was when I was a child. But the commandment didn't stop. I am still supposed to honor my parents. We each are supposed to honor our parents no matter if we're 3 years old or 93 years old if our parents are still alive. We are to honor our parents throughout our life. And then the seventh commandment follows with you shall not commit adultery. Again, the value of the marriage covenant, the importance of treating our spouses with respect, of not doing anything that would cause division, that would not cause do anything that would cause harm to that marriage foundation. So again, three of the Ten Commandments are based on Sabbath, based on the family, and they're right there in the middle, holding the law together. You know, in Malachi 2, verse 16, we won't turn there, but again, it says God hates divorce. And the reason is because he sees what it does to families. And he sees how it breaks things apart. And the consequences that go along with it. And we see consequences throughout the Bible. I mean, think about Solomon. I mean, Solomon had so many wives, so many concubines. He didn't respect that family marriage dynamic. And look at the consequences in his life. David, Bathsheba is kind of the same story. All the consequences that happened in their physical life for not obeying those commandments, for not respecting marriage, not respecting the family. I mean, David especially, if you look at David, I mean, remember, I mean, Absalom, and he wasn't a great father. I mean, he was busy being a king and leading an army and stuff like that. But, I mean, Absalom, I mean, wanted to kill him. All these different consequences to not following exactly the way God set it up. Where you have one husband, one wife, children under that, honoring their parents. And you see all the consequences. So again, just like the Sabbath, they're codified in the law. The value that God places on these things is very important. Let's go to Jesus' time. What was Jesus' example? Again, if these things weren't going to be important, wouldn't have Jesus have changed them? Wouldn't he have said, no, this is now what we're supposed to do? What did Jesus do? Luke 4. Luke 4 and verse 16. Luke 4 and verse 16. It says, so he came to Nazareth, where he had been brought up, and as his custom was, he went into the synagogue on the Sabbath day, and he stood up to read. So as his custom, he went in to the synagogue on the Sabbath. And he did that all his life. Now someone say, oh, well, but he had to. He was a Jew, right? But he came to destroy it, right? As soon as he died, then everything, destroyed. Again, none of that makes any sense. We go back. It's from the very beginning. And again, what people don't understand is Jesus Christ, according to John 1, 1 through 3, is the one who created the Sabbath. He's the one who created the universe underneath the Father. He made the Sabbath. He made the Sabbath. And you're telling me that he came and said, okay, well, now it's not important. We're just going to get rid of it. Doesn't make any sense. And we see that Jesus was not afraid to challenge things going on. He challenged the Pharisees on plenty of things, right? But he never challenged the commandment of the Sabbath. If the Sabbath was going to be done away with, if it was really going to now become Sunday, would not have Jesus challenged the Pharisees on that? And there's no record of that. In fact, in Matthew 12, Jesus expounds on the Sabbath. Matthew 12 and verse 8, let's go there. Jesus did this with all the commandments. He came and he made them more difficult. He was like, hey, you're just looking at them from the letter of the law. You need to look at these from the spiritual. And when we spiritually look at these commandments, we see that they're even more difficult. And Jesus set that up with the Sabbath. But Matthew 12 and verse 8, he's very clear. Matthew 12 and verse 8 says, for the Son of Man is Lord even of the Sabbath. He didn't do away with it. He didn't change it. He said, I am the God even of the Sabbath. And again, because he's the one who created it. In verse 12, he continues saying, of how much more value then is man than the sheep? Therefore, it is lawful to do good on the Sabbath. Again, he expounded on the meaning of it. He verified that the Sabbath was still there. Again, because the issue was, the Pharisees were adding all these different obligations on the Sabbath that weren't biblical. And so Jesus was talking about healing. He healed somebody. He didn't say, oh, no, I can do it because it doesn't exist anymore. No, he said it's lawful to do good on the Sabbath. So Jesus' life, everything that he did, was based on following the law. And people who say, well, he abolished it. As soon as he died, he abolished it. Matthew 5:17 answers that question. Think not that I've come to abolish the law and the prophets. I've not come to abolish them, but to fulfill them. Jesus himself, his own word, said, I didn't come to abolish anything. I came to amplify them. So again, we know that Jesus obeyed, kept the Sabbath. We know that he believed in the Sabbath. We know that he didn't change the Sabbath. And he did all the exact same things when it came to the family. Matthew 15. Let's look at what his view of the family was. Matthew 15 and verse 3. So he's talking to the Pharisees. And again, remember, the Pharisees had kind of created their own things. So he said in verse 3, he answered and said to them, why do you also transgress the commandment of God because of your tradition? For God says, honor your father and your mother. And he who curses father or mother, let him be put to death. But you say, well, whoever says to his father or mother, whatever profit you might have received from me is a gift to God, then he need not honor his father or mother. Thus you've made the commandment of God of no effect by your tradition. And he goes and calls them hypocrites. So Jesus challenged them. They had created this set of rules that basically said, hey, whatever money you were going to give to your parents to make sure that they had food and rent and all this, if you give it to the church, well, that's okay. You don't have that responsibility anymore. And Jesus says, that's absolutely not true. The commandment says, honor your mother and your father. The commandment is what is important, not your tradition, not your rule. The commandment supersedes all that. And again, people don't have an issue with that, but suddenly the Sabbath somehow was abolished, or it was changed, when Jesus clearly challenged the Pharisees when they were making doing things with commandments that shouldn't have been done. It's very valid. Jesus honored his parents throughout his life. Remember Luke chapter 2, verse 51? You can put that in your notes, but Luke 2, 51. So Jesus is 12 years old, and the family's coming back from heading back to Nazareth from Jerusalem since days of unleavened bread were over. They're looking around. They don't find Jesus. They go back in, and there's Jesus. He's 12. He's at the temple, and he's talking to the religious leaders and discussion and debating, and his parents pull him away. Actually, I'm going to turn there. I'll read that verse. And it says that his parents were like, hey, you know, you can't be doing that. You can't be running away. And it says in verse 51, it says that he went down with them and came to Nazareth and was subject to them. He obeyed them. And to me, again, once being a kid, having kids, the fact that he was able to always to perfectly honor his parents like his entire life and as a kid, you know, the parenting class that we did, they had the phrase of first time listening. I don't know if they still use that one in this one or not, but first time listening was what we were told that we were teaching our kids. The fact that Jesus was able to first time listen like his entire adolescence, that's impressive, you know, to think about that. But it says that he respected them. And then in John 19, let's turn there, which I think, again, shows how perfect Jesus was and the love that he had. I've always found these verses remarkable because, again, Jesus is dying on the cross. He's about to die. And one of the last things that he does before he says, you know, it's finished, is he takes care of his mom. He's thinking about his mom. He's worried about his mom. In John 19, verse 25, now there stood by the cross of Jesus his mother and his mother's sister, Mary, the wife of Clopas and Mary Magdalene. When Jesus therefore saw his mother and the disciple whom he loved standing by, he said to his mother, woman, behold your son. And then he said to the disciple, behold your mother. And from that hour, that disciple took her to his own home. In some of his last breaths, he made sure that his mom was taken care of, that he honored her all the way to the end. That always stood out to me. It's just kind of, it's an amazing little two or three verses in here that was on his mind and that he made sure that his mother was taken care of, honoring that commandment all the way to the end, as again, being the perfect sacrifice for us. So again, that's amazing. So the last portion then is the New Testament church, especially with the Sabbath, because we're always told, well, that's when everything changed, right? Jesus then died, and the law suddenly didn't matter, mostly just the Sabbath. Again, no one has any problem with the other commandments. But is that true? Well, we know the early church observed the Sabbath. Very clear about that. Acts 17:2, Acts 18:4 talks about Paul going to the synagogue on the Sabbath. And Acts 18:4 is very interesting because it says that he went and he spoke to the Jews and the Gentiles in the synagogue. If the Sabbath was going to be changed or had been changed to Sunday, Paul, who was sent to the Gentiles, would have no reason to ever go into a synagogue. He would have went and just found the Gentiles anytime and be like, hey, we're going to come hang out on Sunday morning. No, the Gentiles that were being called, the Gentiles that Paul was working with, understood that part of that calling was the Sabbath. Because we read that in Exodus 31, that the Sabbath is the mark of God's people. And they understood that. And Paul didn't say, oh, no, you're wrong. That's where Paul was meeting them. Hey, it's a Sabbath. We're going to be in the synagogue. And so it wasn't until centuries later that the Sabbath began to be replaced by Sunday. And it's not a secret. It's not a secret at all. It's history shows that the people that changed the Sabbath are very proud of it. They're very vocal about it. They don't hide it at all. I want to read just a few quotations to you from an article. My dad gave this to me years ago, so I'm not sure how old it is, but it was published by the Bible Sabbath Association. The article's titled Roman Catholic and Protestant Confessions About Sunday. And these are just quotes from books. And I want to read you a few. If you're interested, I'm not going to read everything. It's 3 pages. But if you're interested, you can come find me and you can borrow it or take a picture of it on your phone and look at it. But just listen to some of these quotes. The first one is from James Cardinal Gibbons in a book called The Faith of Our Fathers. He says, quote, "But you may read the Bible from Genesis to Revelation and you will not find a single line authorizing the sanctification of Sunday. The scriptures enforce the religious observance of Saturday, a day which we never sanctify." So here's a cardinal just flat out saying, no, the Bible says Sabbath, we changed it. And we don't have any issues with it at all. In a book called A Doctrinal Catechism by Stephen Keenan, it was a question and answer. The question was, have you any other way of proving that the church has power to institute festivals of precept? The answer by the individual was, had she not had such power, she could not have done that in which all modern religionists agree with her. She could not have substituted the observance of Sunday, the first day of the week, for the observance of Saturday, the seventh day, a change for which there is no scriptural authority. Dr. Edward T. Hiscox was a prominent Baptist minister. This book is actually, this was an article from 1893, so pretty old. It was in the New York Examiner. And his quote was, there was and is a commandment to keep holy the Sabbath day. But the Sabbath day was not Sunday. It will be said, however, and with some show of triumph, that the Sabbath was transferred from the seventh to the first day of the week. Where can the record of such a transaction be found? Not in the New Testament. Absolutely not. And they go on and on. And again, what's the common link in all this is there's a pride that they, you know, that the Roman Catholic Church has, and even on the side on the Protestants, there's a pride that they have that they were able to change this. Who's the most prideful being that's ever existed? Satan. He takes pride that he's done this. He takes pride in all this. And so again, it's not a secret. But you can show this to people, your friends or whatever, show this to people who, or say they're Christians, and they go to church on Sunday, and it might as well be a blank piece of paper. They will not understand. They will not grasp it. They're blinded right now. But we know God has a plan for that. But the point is, history itself shows that the Sabbath was never changed. It's always been Friday sunset to Saturday sunset. Man changed it to Sunday. And then the excuses began to flow from that. The early church realized that the physical family, again, was the same thing. Physical family was very important. The apostles wrote about the family structure. Paul writes in Colossians and Ephesians, he talks about the roles of husbands and wives, of children, of parenting. It was important. Let's go to 1 Timothy 5:8. We'll go to 1 Timothy 5:8 because I think this is important, that he's teaching Timothy, and he talks about the importance and the responsibility of having and taking care of your family. 1 Timothy 5, verse 8. Says, "But if anyone does not provide for his own, and especially for those of his own household, he has denied the faith and is worse than an unbeliever." To be worse than an unbeliever is someone that doesn't take care of their family, doesn't respect their marriage vows, doesn't do all these things. And again, the reason why the New Testament church was so focused on family is, again, they knew the spiritual connection. All these physical things that we do have spiritual connections. It's all about God's future kingdom. God is making a family. That's how we talked about that at the very beginning. That's why these themes are woven throughout the Bible, of how important they are, because they focus us on God's return, on God's future kingdom, on the millennium, all these things. It's just how important they are. So I hope that as we went through these things today, I hope, again, this was nothing new to you, but I wanted to kind of dust some of these things off, because it's things that sometimes we just don't spend a lot of time on because we feel like we know them so well, we don't think about them as much. But I hope that you've seen today how the Sabbath and the family, how these things are linked together. And again, it's not an accident that Satan is doing everything in his power to destroy these things, because he knows how valuable they are. They are truly spiritual treasures that God has given us. They really are. They're valuable. Not many people know about them. Not many people have them. That's the kind of the definition. When there's a bunch of something, it's not valuable. When there's very little bit of something, that's the value. It's just, and it always has been this way, there's a small little group of people that God has always chosen to work with. And those small group of people that he's chosen, he's given these treasures. He said, I'm going to show you this. Now it's up to you. Are you going to value this? Are you going to keep doing this? Like Chevy was saying in the theme of camps this year, you know, the race of the crown, are you going to keep going? Are you going to finish the race? That's on us. That's our decision to make. I mean, we can take these treasures and just throw them out. We can. But it doesn't mean that they're not a treasure. It doesn't mean that they're not important. And it doesn't mean it's not the way God wants things done. So we just need to make sure that we don't take these things for granted and we don't forget about them. In closing, we'll go to Matthew 6 and read verses 19 through 21. It says, do not lay up for yourselves treasures on earth, where moth and rust destroy and where thieves break in and steal. And our society, our world tells us to lay up as many earthly treasures as we can. Get the biggest bank account we can, you know, the biggest 401k. But what does Jesus say? He says, no, but lay up for yourselves treasures in heaven, where moth nor rust destroy and where thieves do not break in and steal. Why? And here's the key, for where your treasure is, there your heart will be also.